Hi, this is Mimi, and welcome to my podcast, The Lovely Becoming. Today's guest is Lauren Delury, who is amazing and talks a lot about deconstruction and religious trauma and transitions. And I'm so excited to have you on. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting. I'm going to have you on my podcast too. So it's just going to be like back and forth, just sharing the love. So I'm excited.
Yes, I can't wait. So tell us about yourself. What do you do? What do you love?
Name influencer, but you know, that's something that I basically, you know, I try to use my platform to just spread awareness and be authentic. That's something that I've dedicated to is just coming online as real as possible. And yeah, so I do that with Instagram and TikTok. I make funny little videos about, again, it's about deconstruction or about spiritual practices or anything like that. But I'm huge on embodiment and living a real human life because we are humans after all. And so that's part of my spiritual practice is embodying my humanness. And I like to encourage other people to do the same.
That's awesome.
So I do have a podcast and it's called Deconstruct. I do that with my husband, Adam. And we do talk about faith a lot. We talk about life and love. We talk about purity culture and talk about marriage and relationships and all that stuff. So, of course, that's a passion of mine. And throughout all of that, I also have a blog where I do pretty much the same sort of stuff, but I just write it from my own personal one perspective. I'm learning to be okay with the word content creator. it's been weird. I still try to refuse the.
So walk me through your upbringing in church and your deconstruction process a little bit.
Okay. So I grew up, I actually grew up going to a Methodist church. So my parents actually, unlike a lot of parents, they actually got more religious as I got older and more conservative. We actually ended up leaving the Methodist church when I was 14. And I don't know 100% what my parents' final last straw was, but I do know some of the reasons why they weren't liking it is reasons why I would like it today, which was, you know, affirming the LGBTQ community. And a lot of Methodist church do, which I love, and you know, things like that. So we left that when I was 14, and then they were church hunting for 2 years, and then I actually went off to college, and I went to Belmont University, and I studied music, and from there on, my sister and I did music together, and after about a year or so of us just doing positive music, secular music, whatever. We actually decided to go into the Christian music industry, which was not the right decision for us. Well, I say that, but you know, I don't regret anything. We toured, I did graduate and then we toured for like 3.5 years straight doing music together. Being in CCM was a long, hard road. but we did end up winning a Juno Award for Best Christian Album of the Year in 2019. But at that point, my sister had quit the band like 6 months before that, which was kind of the catalyst for a lot of my deconstruction. But before that, a couple months before she had quit the band, my now husband and I got married. So he was the drummer for the band. So he was first our drummer, and then I fell in love. That's the whole story in and of itself. But yeah, so after getting married we fell in love so quickly. That was part of the good and positive part of my deconstruction. There's a lot of heaviness that comes with deconstruction, but mine actually began when I fell super head over heels for Adam. And I was like, wow, if being this happy is wrong, I'm happy being wrong. And I remember hearing a voice, you know, from God or from within, say, who do you think I am? So that was like that beautiful moment where I started unpacking what that was. And then anyway, like I said, sorry, I'm kind of jumping everywhere. But then whenever my sister ended up quitting the band, and we had really been through a lot in CCM, you know, being two girls in that world, trying to uphold the standards of purity culture and also perpetuate those ideals, was damaging in and of itself, because, you know, you're like the face of it. Adam likes to say that we were professional Christians. And yeah, so Adam and I just had to start over, basically. Whenever we didn't have the band anymore, we also weren't touring anymore, so that wasn't our lifestyle anymore. We're newly married, had to figure out jobs, because we weren't getting, you know, our normal life wasn't touring. So what was that like for us to live in a city together and also be kind of deconstructing and realize that we don't have that community, and we didn't really have people around us that supported us. And then we went through some hard times. He and I were always good, and we, you know, we clung to each other, and it was some beautiful times for us, but it was hard outside of our relationship, very hard. And we had always had really good conversations. And as I was really figuring things out, and after I had publicly affirmed the LGBTQ community through a video, I realized that I needed to do more and more and more of this, just speaking out and letting people know exactly where I stand. And then we began our podcast, because I was like, well, Adam and I always have really good conversations. we built a community in our little, you know, 500 square foot apartment through one little snow globe microphone that we both talked into. And yeah, so that's just kind of how we've like snowballed into like where we are today. But yeah, sorry, that was a long version of how I grew up. My faith story.
No, I love that. It's so interesting, like talking about it and learning about it. And it's really nice to hear other people going through similar things and to hear your story as well.
Wow, thanks for letting me share it.
Yeah.
It's a whole long process, and there's so many different paths, like conversational like paths to take from it. So I always try to just like hit the point. So
I relate to that. What was it like deconstructing in a relationship? Was it kind of like similarly paced, or did you feel like there were times where you were in different places?
Well, we were definitely in different places in the beginning. So I from my perspective and my personality and Adam's personality, I think like people kind of need to understand that. So, and like where we've come from, I was definitely more on the dogmatic side of things. I think probably because I'm a naturally spiritual person, and I kind of had to take control of that by giving myself kind of like these black and white answers, or so I thought, and trying to follow the rules, like by the book, quote unquote, you know, by the Bible, whatever that meant for me then. And so I was very dogmatic. So whenever I went into deconstruct and I started doing my research as an adult, but was led by my intuition and dare I say, even my feelings, which I had always shoved down since I was a little kid, because I was told the heart is deceitful above all else. You know, when I started being like, okay, this thing that I circled in the Bible over and over and over, just questioning, this can't be right. Something's wrong with this. Now we know. So the topic was the LGBTQ, it's homosexuality, right? Now we know that it was added in 1946 in the Bible. And I knew when I was 11 that something wasn't right. And I knew in my spirit that something wasn't right. So whenever I started deconstructing and researching and trying so hard to make the Bible make sense and make the Bible inerrant, I was really, really hoping that could stay and stay true, because then I wouldn't have to really change my life, you know, I just could change it a little bit here and there. But, you know, that's how it begins. That's how it unravels. And then in my own perspective, the Bible is not inerrant. That's my own interpretation of the Bible, that it is not, and it is contextual. And after I came to that conclusion, there was a lot of other things that I started unraveling. So as a researcher, I kind of did all of this research by myself in quiet. Adam didn't even know I was kind of going through some of this stuff. And so one day he likes to joke that I like presented him with a thesis of how I basically changed my mind about everything, about the Bible and about basically how we saw the world and how I was going to behave and how all of that. Like it just, I presented him a thesis. Okay. So that's my perspective, his perspective. Adam is somebody who's always held things loosely. He's not so dogmatic. He is not a black and white person. Like that's not how he ever really sees the world. On a positive side, yes, he's able to hear everyone's perspective and be understanding, but on a maybe not so like positive side of it, he also didn't have anything to hold on to. Mm. And that's been something that he has been working on even personally, because it's healthy to hold on to something. It's healthy to have something to stand on. It's healthy to have something you believe in and speak for. You know, with his upbringing, it was just safer for him to just float everywhere, you know, and just like let things come and go. And, but that is his personality. And so of course, when I presented him with this thesis, it was jarring. It had to have been jarring. He was on the road with me. He heard what I said. He knew what I was for and about. And so, it was jarring for him, but part of my deconstruction process was me telling him, hey, look, I'm just letting you know where I'm at. I have no need for you to meet me where I am, because it was the first time in my life that I was actually so happy to be on my own little island and be like, honestly, I don't know who would agree with me. I don't know right now. Like I did not have that community. I did not have anyone who I knew that would completely agree with me. Besides, I think I was learning through maybe Brenda, like God is Gray. I was watching her videos and a couple others. I think Jamie Lee Finch, I was listening to her episodes, but I didn't know those people at the time. and so I told him, I was like, I don't need you to agree with me. I don't need you to, I honestly told him to take it as slow as he possibly could, because the last thing I wanted was for him to feel like I rushed him into something that he was not ready for. Because in my heart, I knew who he was, that he would agree with me that all human beings deserve love and are worthy. Like I knew that that is who Adam is and what he believes, but he didn't have anything to stand on to kind of like proclaim that. And so I knew in time that he would come around to speak loudly about these things, but I didn't want to rush it. So I had patience with him, and he had patience with me, because I also played with words that were very hard for him to hear, especially in the beginning. You know, part of my process was using the pronoun she for God, to basically retrain my own brain. I did that intentionally just to like unwire that, I guess, the he God. And that was like kind of weird for him at first, but he was fine. He was like, it just weird for him. I also played with the word witch, and I still do. And now he's like, this is years later, right? He gets it and whatever. But at first he's like, witch, like magic, bad things, evil, like all these words coming to his mind. And but I kind of liked that inflammatory language to help me move past them, and in turn he learned a lot too, and it just took some time. I think once we got past that season of just like being understanding and trying to create space for both of each other, it was pretty quickly that we started having these conversations and started recording them. And that's literally why we started the podcast, is because these conversations were so interesting. Like, they were, I mean, not to, like, you know, pat our own backs, not that we're, I think we're the most interesting people in the world, but I'm like, there's got to be other people who want to hear this. There's going to be other people, like, other people who, even if they think we're crazy, like, at least that's a listener. Gonna be like, what are they up to? I'm like, I think it'd be interesting. So we started recording it and posting it live, and that's literally how it came to be. But yeah, so it's been a journey, but I think it's just holding space for each other and not rushing each other either.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because I think a lot of times people are in very different places when they're in a relationship, and maybe one starts to deconstruct and the other is kind of like, what are you doing? Yeah. And so it's really cool to hear how, like, it's, they're also stories of people who are kind of in doing it well, and respectfully and kindly. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah. Well, I think if he was somebody who just, like, wanted, if the roles were reversed, it would be so much more difficult, like so much more difficult. So I truly empathize with people who the personalities are switched, where it's the more feeler and understanding, and that person is the one who's deconstructing, and then the person who's more dogmatic is not. That would be so much more difficult, because people who are dogmatic, that's when the chopper comes down real hard, right? That's when you're just like, no, this is how it is, I won't listen, you know, like, I've heard of those people and those relationships, and that's a very, very hard way to navigate that deconstructing together. So I do feel very lucky that the personalities were, we were who we were, we deconstructed, but now we're like, we're pretty much always on the same page. It's just, yeah, I'm very thankful for the way we both handle things.
I love that. I love that a lot. So what, how do you kind of get over the fear of hell? Because I feel like that's really pressing in Christianity, especially for when it's like taught as a young child, or is it still something that's scary, stuff like that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because that's very, very broad, and you're asking me personally. So again, all of this is my perspective, and I, you know, I'm sure you have different people who you have on who have studied things in ways that can help the masses in a broad stroke. And I just speak from my personal experience. For me, I never really understood hell. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it, to be honest with you. I actually spent a lot of time thinking heaven sounded like hell. Actually, I was definitely more scared of heaven just on the day to day. Cause there's just no, I just knew there's no way, like there was no way I was going to hell. So that was my perspective. And I know that's such a trigger for some people, is that they are so scared that they're going to go to hell. But I was fully confident that I was going to go to heaven, but I was very scared that heaven was going to be so boring. And all I was going to do is, like, you know, be working, and I was a singer, so I think I was just like, you mean I'm literally just going to sing forever, like forever and ever, like that's probably gonna be my job, because I'm a singer on earth, God is gonna make me one of the worship leaders, and that's all I'm ever gonna be able to do. I'm never gonna have fun. Honestly, I thought about heaven a lot, but there is, of course, there have been the moments where, especially in the beginning of deconstructing, you know, you're like, wait, am I listening to the right voice? I think that was something that came up a lot in the beginning, because the devil was personified so much, and made to be so close to me all the time. That was like the language, was that he was like waiting around the corner to like snatch you up. That's the verbiage that was used. And so I think in deconstructing, there were times that I questioned, is this it, me? And if it's me, is that the devil? And I think learning that the devil doesn't speak goodness and like wholeness and truth. Also, I don't believe, just sidebar, I don't believe in the devil anymore. But in the beginning, when I'm using this language, I think reminding myself that I was pressing into love and I was pressing into to humanity, which Jesus literally was God embodied. He was embodied deity. And so our humanness can't be bad. If God himself wrapped himself in flesh, right, in this humanness, then this humanness I have to embrace 100%. And so anyway, that embodiment work really helped me to understand that it wasn't like the devil trying to sneak me away into deconstructing and asking these questions. And so I think that was more so what had come up a lot. Hell, I think learning from very smart people who do the work of researching the words. I like facts and I like origin. That's very important to me. And there's people all over Instagram and all over the internet who are deconstructing or deconstructed accounts that will have story highlights about what the word hell means and what the word Satan means and the definition and the breakdown. And I think learning that stuff, learning the truth of the language, I was like, oh, okay. Like, it's just passed on tradition, whether it's fear tactics or not. It's just passed on tradition. It's not scarier than just words on a page, to me. And that's really what helped me. And so I think the more you know, like, knowledge is power and knowledge is healing. That's the phrase I've just been using a lot lately. It's just, knowledge is not only power, but it's healing. When you know the truth of it, when you know the definition of things, you're like, oh, there's a definition. Like, it's okay. Like, it's not that scary. But yeah, anyway, sorry. That's another roundabout answer, but.
No, that's really helpful. And I think, you know, I've been thinking recently a lot about how, like, the portrayal of heaven sometimes doesn't sound as exciting as we think it is as kids. Like,
yeah,
if it's like, like gates of gold and like, what if you don't like gold? Or like, if it's always daytime and like, what if you like the nighttime?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think like heaven is, yeah, it's, I mean, the first word that comes to my head is performative. Well, I really have a hard time with the church, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I feel like church to me, actually, one of my friends said this before, what heaven is to you, like, mm-hmm. That's what heaven is. If you choose to believe in like an actual place, I think the days that I do, that I just think of my happiest moments. And then I just tell myself, I'm like, that moment, that experience that you had on earth, just like constant, that's just happening always. So yeah, I just try to talk myself down from the whole worship leader 24/7 for all of eternity. I'm like, no, that can't be heaven. That must be the other place.
Yes, definitely. Oh my gosh. What are some of your major problems with church? Whether it be conservative Christianity or progressive, if you have any.
I don't know. This might not be totally PC. I don't really know. But it, to me, church in my progressive Christian faith was like therapy, in the sense that you don't always have to go, right? There's going to be seasons of your life where it's healing and you need to go more often. Maybe there are things going on in your life. Maybe you need a community, or maybe you need to feel belonging, like a belonging. Maybe you need to feel, I don't know, like anything. There's a variety of things that church, community, tradition, all of that, the ritual of it, can be healing. I don't believe that church is a forever state. Now, mind you, I'm speaking of, I really only support like affirming churches, progressive affirming churches. But I do think it's just a season of your life. I think church, at least for a long time, foreseeable long time, is going to have its issues because there is a hierarchy, and that's just natural. It's a system. And that's just kind of how it works. And I think there's beauty and there's healing. And I think once you've gotten that healing and you, I think you can move on. I think you can take back your Sundays. I think you can relax on those days. You can go get brunch with friends and kind of replace it with something that brings you joy. And that's essentially what I've done. Is I was a part of a progressive Christian church for a couple months, and I was on the worship team, and it felt really good and healing, and felt so good to be on stage. And I felt like, you know, I could wear shorts to church and I wasn't like shamed. Like, that was healing. I needed that in that season, especially because I still truly identified as a Christian, and that was good for me. But I don't need that now. I do have friends outside of the church. I do have a community outside of the Christian community now, and that feels really good to have friends and to have, we all work crazy schedules and to get brunch with them on Sundays. That is church to me now. But I know I said performative was my main thing, so I just want to go back to that just real quick. So within churches, I see there a lot of performative things. They can talk the talk, but it's so hard for churches to walk the walk, to use Christian lingo. Even if they talk on stage or in the sermons about supporting a people group, it's so rare to see it actually lived out. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of just got burnt out by that. And I don't really need a group setting of kind of hypocrisy. Like, I don't really want to be a part of that. Like I said, I do think a church setting is healing for people, but it's just not for me. I think I have been around church too often, and I can see through a lot of things. The only time I would consider going back into a church is if it was if the pastor speaker was like a woman, and specifically a woman of color. I honestly just wouldn't feel comfortable at this point going back to a church that's a cis straight white male. I don't need to sit under that leadership anymore in my life. I really don't have place for that in my heart. I'm not in a receiving place, you know, to hear from that perspective. So that's where I'm at. I think church just needs to be better at actually doing what it says and what it, like, laying down its own structure and doing what it says it's going to do.
Yeah, definitely. That's really helpful. And I think that's important to, like, know who you're kind of standing under and whose perspectives you're taking in all the time, because we usually get that very heteronormative perspective anyways. And so to really branch out is really important too.
Yeah. And yeah, I would love that. I mean, I essentially sit under women of color teaching and preaching all the time. It's just not in a church setting. It's just like, that's what I fill my Instagram feed up with. That's like who I listen to, what I read. Like, so essentially that's what I do. I just, you know, get to sleep in on Sundays now.
Yes. And brunches. Brunches are amazing.
Yes.
What does spirituality look like for you now?
Oh gosh. Spiritually, it's always when I don't expect it. Spiritual experience. I definitely feel lucky in the sense of I have a deep connection with my ancestors. I am Indigenous. And beyond just being Indigenous though, I'm sure that has a major play into why I'm spiritually connected to my ancestors, but I also have a white parent, and I am also connected to her parents as well. And So it does go beyond just my Indigenous roots. I think there's something very special with my Indigenous roots, my dad's mother specifically, and she and I are connected in the sense of there are some days I believe in reincarnation, and I believe that sometimes I am the reincarnation of her. I was supposed to be born on her birthday. There's a whole thing I could go there. And sometimes I just believe that I have like she's, her spirit is with me. Other times I just believe she's literally just in my blood, and that's as basic as it gets. But I don't have a spiritual practice. I know that that's not what anybody wants to hear, because everybody wants like something tangible to like do. But the main thing I do is like, if something scares me, I do it. And so that is my spiritual practice. My spiritual practice is also embodiment. Like I was kind of saying in the beginning, I spent a lot of my life ignoring my needs and desires and my pleasures. Like my whole life, basically. I spent just tucking that away. And so my spiritual practice is not doing that anymore. And I don't, it sounds crazy, but like it's kind of like I have no one to prove anything to at this point. I am no longer part of CCM. I'm not part of any sort of brand besides whatever it is that I want out there. I have no one to answer to. That's the phrase. Yeah, I have no one to answer to except for myself. And I make sure of that. As soon as I start getting afraid, even of spiritual people or deconstructed people or even like atheists or other indigenous people, when I get scared of even what they may think, I do a quick check-in, because I spent my whole life scared of the religious, scared of not being able to speak my mind, not being able to chase my pleasures and desires and or my like pure wants and goals and passions. I spent so much of my life just pushing that away that there's just, I don't tolerate it anymore, even in myself. So as soon as I catch a glimpse of that fear, I sit with it for a second and I try to think of why that I'm having those experiences, I'm feeling those feelings, and then I push through. And then I make a post about such thing, or I even post on my story, just getting it out of my system. I think it is my spiritual practice. It doesn't look like lighting candles and like burning sage always. Sometimes it does, but that's usually in paying respects after I've had a spiritual encounter or I've had some kind of revelation. I'll pay respects, but I don't really like to do anything to make myself more spiritual, except for embodiment and just being very, very real to like just being my most authentic self.
Mm-hmm. I really like what you said about kind of getting it out of yourself, because I think we were taught to keep a lot inside, and processing externally can be really helpful for other people, but also for ourselves. Yeah. And like that, it's like, it doesn't have to be a specific practice, but it can be kind of, it's almost like ritual things that we do in these internal knowing.
Yeah, for sure. And I was talking to a friend and I told her, I was like, sometimes I feel like my social media self is almost more aggressive than I even am in real life. It comes across that way just because I challenge myself to not hold anything back. And so you see the glimpses of me being like, nah, do it. You better do it. You better post, or you better say that thing, or you better not be scared. And that's just my own thing. And I'm not always like that. I don't feel like that. But it is something that I even if I don't post on Instagram, I try to have a conversation where I'm telling somebody what it is I've been thinking or something I've experienced, or I'll speak about it on the podcast, or just tell Adam, and that's pretty much it. Like, I'll tell Adam at the very least. But I think, yeah, it is important to just like get it out there and and mess up too. Like, there is a legitimacy to being respectful and mindful with your words and what you say and how you say it. But at the same time, sometimes you just gotta blurb things out, and you know, Adam is my safe place to do that, and I'm thankful to have him.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. You're amazing, and I really appreciate your time. And I'm so excited to come on your podcast. But I was just wondering, I also, these are the two questions I ask everybody, but what are your favorite foods?
But I like Thai food.
Mm-hmm.
I like any kind of curry. I love it. I love popcorn. I love snacky foods. So like chips and popcorn and other kind of things are like, I don't eat dairy, but I have, there's like a vegan Cheez-It that is like, ooh, my ultimate snack. I also really like seaweed snacks. I just like chippy like things all day. I could just eat that nonstop.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. And my last question is, how are you becoming?
I am becoming more time and more proud of the energy I put out there. But I'm trying to say I know what my time and energy is worth. So I guess whatever that means, I'm becoming more powerful in my knowing my worth. And because I'm not just becoming more powerful, as I hope that we all are coming into our own power, but acknowledging that on a day-to-day. And I feel like that's what I'm trying to say. I don't know if I said that in any sort of eloquent way, but I am becoming more just my time is just becoming more precious to me, as we talked about in the beginning. And so I'm becoming that woman who's busy doing what she wants to do, and taking names.
Love it. Oh my gosh, thank you.
Thank you. This has been so fun. I like love chatting with you. You're such a sweet soul, but also just like you're an open book, but I feel like people, I see it like on your Instagram and everything too, like you just create such a safe space for people and such a safe environment for people to explore their own reactions. It's something that I've seen like on your feed, and I can tell, like even speaking with you, it's just, you are introspective and that comes across, and it makes me introspective. And
thank you. I really accept and treasure those words.
Watching how you just kind of glide through a conversation, it's just been such an honor to be a part.